Today's episode could be a pretty lonely one. We're going to be talking about abandoned ghost towns in North Carolina. Welcome to the NC Everything Podcast. I'm your host, Curtis, and this is the bi-weekly show where I talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Thank you all for joining me again, and thank you newcomers for joining me for the first time. I'm going to jump right into it because I feel like I have a whole lot to cover here. I'll do the promotional stuff at the end, unless I forget, kind of like I did a few episodes ago. So let's go ahead and get into it. This episode was kind of suggested or inspired by Christian from work. Thank you, Christian, for the suggestion. He suggested one ghost town or abandoned town, and it'll be the first one I cover in here. But I figured since I was looking at one abandoned town, I'd go ahead and look at several. And there are several in our state that are not on this list. I may have to revisit this again pretty soon. But I went through five or six, and I didn't do a long, deep dive into any of them, but I kind of give the rundown of each of them. And some of them are a little longer than others. But the first one we're going to be talking about is Buffalo City. Now, this is down east. It's 19 miles west of Manio. And the last time I was out of the Outer Banks, I'm sure I had to have passed by what was left of Buffalo City, which I think now is just a hiking trail and a sign. And you can't see it from the road. I think what I read, you can take, I think it's Buffalo City Road. It might be in my notes. You can take Buffalo City Road, which is now an old dirt road. It goes way out in the woods, and then I think there may be a bridge out there, and that's where that sign is I was talking about. But I'm certain that I passed by Buffalo City Road on the way out to the Outer Banks last time I was there. But the story here is the Buffalo Timber Company, they established the town, Buffalo City, after the Civil War. They picked a spot on Milltel Creek, and the town was built by Russian immigrants and former slaves. And yes, the road going out to the town was Buffalo City Road. And since this place, and if you ever go down east, you'll know what I'm talking about. Since Buffalo City was built in a swamp on this marshland, the road itself was built out of old unusable lumber and pieces of wood and sawdust. Now, the houses in the town, they were pretty interesting. If you lived in a house in Buffalo City, it was either going to be a red house or a white house. I don't know if that was because that was the only paint they could get at the time or what the story is behind that. But if you were white, you lived in a red house. If you were any other race besides white, you lived in a white house. And again, I'm not sure how they came to this decision or came to this unique layout. Another cool thing about Buffalo City is the lumber company actually made their own currency, which was a little aluminum coins. And this is how they paid the workers. And you would think, who would want to get paid in aluminum crap? But the workers, like a lot of mill towns, they lived in the mill town. And they spent all their money in the mill town. They didn't really go outside of the town. So the lumber company would pay with these little aluminum things rather than cash. And then, of course, the mill workers in town would use this to buy their goods and take care of themselves. Now, the Buffalo Lumber Company was so large, it didn't take them very long to deplete all the resources in the area around Buffalo City. And so they closed down in 1903. And then the Dare Company, they buy the property that is Buffalo City in 1907. Now, even though they changed the name of the town to Daresville, everybody still called the place Buffalo City. And logging picked up and prospered once again. And eventually the logging started waning, but in the 1920s, Prohibition became law. And so the town had a new business idea. The logging camps were closed and moonshine stills were opening up. It ended up being the town's main source of income for a really, really long time. As a matter of fact, and I think I covered this in episode one, I think episode one was my moonshine episode, and I talked about Buffalo City in there. But moonshine from Buffalo City was sent all around the United States, and it was even sent over to Europe. Now, of course, once Prohibition was over, moonshine went down, logging picked back up, but it never did return to its former glory. Finally, in the 1950s, the town closed down, and the town that once kept 3,000 people was abandoned and never really touched again. Today, what's left of what was Buffalo City is kind of encompassed in the 152,000-acre Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge. Next, we'll head to the mountains and talk about Judson and Proctor. These are two different towns, but they were close enough together. They saw the same fate for essentially the same reason. And keep in mind, I talked about both of these towns in episode 20 on my episode on the Road to Nowhere. And I'll mention the Road to Nowhere here, but I'm not going to go into too much detail about Fontana Lake or the Road to Nowhere here. If you want to know why the Road to Nowhere goes nowhere, check out episode 20. But Judson, it's going to be hard to say this one. Judson was a town of 600 residents, and they had an elementary school, a barbershop, local stores, a sawmill, and a post office. So as you can see, it was a fully functioning town. I don't want you to mistake it for it was a place in the middle of nowhere that had a post office and a horse barn. No, it was a fully functioning town. And it was right on the edge of the Tennessee River. The Tennessee River ran either right beside or right through the middle of town. Well, then the federal government, they needed to build Fontana Lake in Swain County. And Fontana Lake, I don't remember now. It may go through multiple counties. But Judson and Proctor were in Swain County. So Fontana Lake comes, and the town is abandoned by force. Once the town was abandoned, the dam was built, the Tennessee River was flooded. And this includes a lot of the outbuilding. A lot of the buildings are still at the bottom of Fontana Lake. Several cemeteries are underwater, and some cemeteries were left on dry land. Now, one thing they do every year, probably every year, is they'll lower the lake levels of Lake Fontana to get ready for the ice melt out of the mountains. You know, they don't want the lake to flood, and so they'll lower the lake level. And they say when they do this and the lake dries up a little bit, you can go out and see parts of Judson. And I think I got notes in here that say you can still see headstones and some of the buildings. And now Proctor, the other town that was a victim of Lake Fontana. Proctor was on Hazel Creek, and it was named after Moses Proctor, who was the first European settler to the area. Some of the town is now underwater because of the lake, but part of the town is still on dry land. It says that on the dry land part of it, one home is still, I guess, left, and the remains of the Ritter Lumber Company, or their mill, is still on dry land. And they say if you hike to the end of the Road to Nowhere and start walking around, you'll start seeing evidence of the town. Now, I've been to the end of the Road to Nowhere, which ends at a tunnel, like most of you know, and I've walked through the tunnel to the other side, but I didn't do too much exploring on the other side of the tunnel. We just kind of walked through, had a quick look around, and walked back through. But apparently what's left of Proctor is still out there somewhere. I will say, if you're going up the road that is the Road to Nowhere and you look out to your left, you can see Fontana Lake down there. So I'm assuming that's where Judson was. You know, if you're on that road, Judson was probably down there to the left somewhere. And then I'm assuming Proctor was kind of up straight ahead. Still in the mountains, we're going to be talking about Lost Cove. They say this area was called Lost Cove because it didn't belong to North Carolina or Tennessee, even though it was right on the state line. But the town was located in a gorge called Poplar Gorge on the Nullichucky River. Now, I don't think they really know exactly when Lost Cove was formed. Some stories say that it was originally settled by some of the people who were in Daniel Boone's party. They do know that it was mostly populated around the Civil War. And there is also a text or some kind of document that traces the origin of the town back to a guy named Morgan Bailey. Supposedly, Morgan Bailey, he bought a bunch of land from a Native American for $10 and a shotgun. And after he set up camp there, or you know, after he established himself there, other people kind of followed. Now, Lost Cove was kind of a smaller agriculture community until the railroad came and the lumber business came with it. And with the lumber business, a bunch of jobs opened up. This is around 1910. And so a lot of lumber mill workers came into the town, and the population kind of boomed at that point. And because Lost Cove was incredibly isolated, it became a big moonshining spot around 1900. But it says that that isolation also led to the downfall of the town. It was so isolated, it was hard to really function as a normal town. And so people eventually started moving out. And by 1960, the place was completely abandoned. And fires in 2007 burned most of the structures down. So I'm not sure how much there is to see in Lost Cove today. But I did read somewhere that it's a real attractive hiking spot. I'm not sure what you can see, but a lot of people hike out to where Lost Cove was. So that may be something to look into. Now we're going to talk about Mortimer. Mortimer is in what today is the Pisgah National Forest. But earlier I talked about the town of Proctor. Proctor really exists because of Mortimer. You know, I talked about the Ritter Lumber Company having a mill there. Well, the Ritter Lumber Company worked out of Mortimer, too. The Ritter Lumber Company, they buy all this land in 1904. I think 1904, yep. And they really quickly build a town. And they build the huge company store and a blacksmith shop, a church, a school, a hotel, and a whole bunch of houses. And they built it just as quick as they could. And just as quick, they started hiring people. And eventually, they had 800 people living in Mortimer. It says the logging that the Ritter Company did in this area took place between Wilson and Steel Creek. And here, there was actually railroad tracks that would take the logs from wherever they were logging to the village of Edgemont. But Mortimer, I think, of all the places I've talked about on the show, they had to have had the worst luck. Because in 1916, a fire burned from Grandfather Mountain to Wilson Creek. And, of course, this fire destroyed a lot of the logging. Well, it destroyed a lot of the trees, which is the core of the logging business. But it also destroyed that railroad that they were using to transport the logs around. Well, the fire was immediately followed by a flood. I'm assuming from a major storm. There's another flood later. I'm assuming just major rain. The fire was immediately followed by the flood, and the flood destroyed the Lake Rodus Dam. And this flood, and I've actually read about it in other research for other shows, the 1916 flood, it's considered to be the worst flood in Caldwell County history. But between the fire and the flood, the Ritter Lumber Company lost everything. And so they eventually shut down and pulled up stakes and got out of town. But the town itself wasn't dead yet. A cotton mill named the United Mills Company opens in 1922. And the town came back to life, but really only for a short time. Then the Civilian Conservation Corps, or CCC, they started a camp in the town during the Great Depression. It was Camp F5. Well, the CCC, they repair a bunch of the damaged buildings, and they try to get the town going again. Then in 1934, O.P. Lutz starts the hosiery factory in the old cotton buildings that were there. But that business went under really shortly after it opened up. And then on August 13th, 1940, Wilson Creek flooded again thanks to a hurricane this time. And it said the creek rose 94 feet and swallowed up the whole town, or what was left of it. And after this flood, the rest of the town's residents finally decided they were done and they left. The Civilian Conservation Corps, they hung out a little bit longer before they finally left too. And the town pretty much remained untouched ever since. And like a lot of these abandoned towns, if you go out to Caldwell County and go up and you go up Wilson Creek, you can still see remnants of Mortimer. And the last one I'll talk about is Cataloochee. And in case I said that too fast, it's Cataloochee. So the story here is in 1791, the U.S. government signed a Treaty of Holston with the Cherokee Indians. And this more or less gave the Americans, the Cherokees, land in that area. Once the Cherokees were out, settlers started moving in. And it was like two valleys in this area. And so the town was kind of split up into to one valley and the other, Big Cataloochee and Little Cataloochee. So when the first settlers started showing up, all the land belonged to Colonel Robert Love. Now, I'm not sure how he came to get it or if he was the one who signed a treaty with the Native Americans, but all the land available belonged to him. And so he was the one that started giving out land grants and giving people land to set up on. And it didn't take long for the Cataloochee area to build up. I didn't get an exact number, but by 1850, there was a ton of people out here. This town actually ended up having three schools in it, which, you know, you think about 1850, 1900, you know, schools are little community schools, and you have one in a vast area. This place had three, and that's why it eventually spread out from, you know, the one valley over to the next valley, and that's why it ended up growing into Big Cataloochee and Little Cataloochee. Ah, here we go. By 1910, there were 1,251 people living between both Cataloochees. At that time, it was actually the largest community in the Smoky Mountains. But remember, I was talking about Lake Fontana? I'll give you the very short version. When they were going to build Lake Fontana, the federal government bought a bunch of land. Well, when they built the lake, they didn't use up all the land. They had this all this extra land left over. And so they turned it into the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And so, as you may guess, Cataloochee was in this area that was going to be a national park. So the government comes in, tells them to get the hell out, and the town was abandoned. Now, based on pictures I've seen, it looks like Cataloochee has been really well preserved. I guess they wanted to get rid of the town's people, not really the town itself. Also, it seems like you can hike out there and walk through what looks like a freshly abandoned town. And that's all I got today on abandoned towns. Like I said, I know there are some that I missed. Portsmouth is a coastal town that doesn't exist anymore. And I've already talked about Brunswick Town on here, which is also a fort. So if you're curious about Brunswick Town, definitely look that up. That was a cool one. But I'll see if I can put together some more, and maybe in a few weeks I'll do another abandoned episode. If you have any ideas for abandoned towns, let me know. Or if you have any ideas for episodes, definitely let me know by writing me at thenceverythingpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if one episode every 2 weeks isn't enough for you, you can join the NC Everything Podcast Facebook group for more NC Everything. And you can check out a monthly show I do with my wife called Tasting NC. It's a show where we taste everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you again, Christian, for the suggestion. I hope the show is what you were hoping it was going to be. And for everybody except Christian, I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.